Welcome to the Point Forward podcast with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinels, J.R. Radcliffe and Jim Ozarski. An over-caffeinated Milwaukee Bucks conversation.
The Point Forward podcast, Milwaukee Bucks chatter from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. My name is J.R. Radcliffe. I am back after a week away. Hopefully you got to hear last week's episode with Lori Nickel and Jim Ozarski. And we are in the midst here of the Milwaukee Bucks chasing that number one overall seed in the Eastern Conference. They do come off a loss against the Denver Nuggets in a back-to-back, look good for a half, and then fell apart a little bit. We'll be talking about that game with the one and only Jim Ozarski, Bucks beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He is on the other line. He is in lovely Detroit. We were just talking off mic how he got to go to these West Coast locations and he was only there for like 5 minutes because the Denver game is, you know, you fly in for the Denver game and you fly out. You did get to see the mountains, at least in the Uber. That was my understanding, Jim.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same mountains in Utah as well. So I had a little more time before that game against the Jazz. But yeah, this is not a great road trip with back-to-backs in the mountains and then to Detroit and then to Indianapolis. Very odd end of regular season trip for the Bucks.
Salt Lake City is an interesting place to me. I've only been there one time, but the one side of town is just all mountains and gorgeous views. It feels like it is like legitimately inside the mountains. And then the other side is the salt flats. So it's completely flatland. It's very strange to me. I don't know if you've ever like explored Salt Lake City. I myself was only there basically for an overnight, so it wasn't even like I know the city intimately. But that's an unusual location. I would love to go back and check that out a little bit better. I know you've been there a few times. Of course, the All-Star game was there.
Yeah, I have not like that. That's a lifestyle, i.e., wanting to be outdoors and skiing and running and stuff. Like that's not like I'll play golf in Utah, but I don't. So I guess the Jazz will have to make a finals for that to happen.
I see where you're going with that. Yeah. Yeah. Like you get people who they go like hike a mountain when they're in Arizona. And I'm just like, screw that, man. I'm sitting inside the air conditioning. That's funny.
Yeah. I mean, but it is. Utah is an interesting place. I definitely have gone to see, you know, the various, you know, religious buildings that are interesting. There's some other like old train stations and stuff from, you know, when railroads mattered and all that stuff. So like, yeah, it is. Some of their architecture is kind of interesting beyond just, you know, your typical skyscraper. But no, I have, mountains are cool. We'll rock with that.
Yeah, mountains are cool. The Bucks are 53-21. They are still in first place in the Eastern Conference. They are a game and a half ahead of Boston. And Jim, the game in Denver interested me because the Bucks went for it. You know, they had a couple guys nursing injuries that did not play. But that was a back-to-back. It would have been an easy opportunity, a Western Conference team. It would have been an easy opportunity for them to rest their guys. And in past years, I feel like that's exactly how they would have handled it. But not here. You had Middleton and Giannis suiting up on back-to-back nights. No, that's not true. Middleton sat out the night before against the Jazz, so I stand corrected there. But they really put their eggs in that basket. They wanted to win that game, and I don't think it's a coincidence that the Nuggets are the best team in the Western Conference. That is potentially a Western Conference, or I should say an NBA Finals matchup. But it also sort of speaks to their overall philosophy. This Bucks team has been very good on back-to-backs this year. This Bucks team is in position to win 60 games, and I don't feel like they're necessarily shying away from that, not necessarily that benchmark, but getting the number one overall seed. They've talked about it this year. They're not poo-pooing it in the past. I think Mike Budenholzer has kind of been like, yeah, we don't really care. And they kind of showed it. Like they weren't necessarily chasing every single win. They knew that they would be a good team come playoff time. They still know that. But it does seem like the one seed is something they really want. And obviously Boston is the number two suitor for that spot. They played a playoff series last year that went seven games. The seventh game was in Boston because Boston had the better record. And I got to think that's resonating in their minds. So just give me the lay of the land as you see it. Has the mentality changed? Is it Mike Budenholzer whose mentality has changed or the players or that Celtics series? Like what is different this year that they really seem to be wanting that number one overall seed?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure the head coach has had something to say about it behind closed doors, but he's never going to sort of break form for us publicly. So it really was the players. And oddly, it was Grayson Allen who was the one who sort of opened the floodgates, because I would say a week before the San Antonio game, when they had sort of cemented themselves as the one, they had that 1-2 game lead. I started asking some of the guys like, hey, okay, the last 2 years, we would ask you, is the one seed important? Are you going to try to like push for it or go for it? And it was no. Like, doesn't matter. Giannis, hey, we were one seed and we never won. So won this title as a three seed. So whatever. So my question was, now that you have it, does it make sense to just keep it? Like, is there a difference? Is there like a mental line of, well, we're not like racing for it, we're not chasing it, versus, well, let's just keep what we have. And yeah, you know, some of the guys still kind of danced around it. I mean, Bobby's like, hey, seeding matters. You know, he mentions, you know, game seven was tough on the road, but could have won in game six. Pat Connaughton. So they all kind of just, eh. But then finally, Grayson Allen, before the Spurs game last week, JR's like, yep, we want the number one seed as a team. And so he's like, you know, he didn't attribute it to losing in Boston, but he was just like, look, it's an advantage, and why not take every advantage that you can? And then Giannis later in that evening acknowledged it as well, saying, hey, like literally that, we already have it, so let's just take it with us into the playoffs. So it is a different mindset. And JR, I think it's easy to forget this a little bit. I mean, there were times in these last 2 years where the Bucks were down around the four seed. And they had to leapfrog three teams and a whole bunch of games to get the one. This is just keep winning and it's yours. And so I think there is a subtle difference. Now, to your point against Denver, you're right. Like, they made a choice. Chris Middleton doesn't play back-to-backs, so they rested him against Utah. Joe Ingles, this was only the second back-to-back that he's played this season. He was available. And look, they looked really good for 24 minutes. You know, if they had played a little better defense, maybe they're up by 16, 17 instead of 10 at one point in the first half. And then I do think the altitude, three games in 4 days in three cities, I do think they felt that in the third quarter, JR. And at that point, Denver's just too good. You know, like, you could kind of have that bad third quarter if you were playing Detroit or, I don't know, the Bulls. But Denver at home in that arena, like, then – you know, the snow was coming down the mountain at that point, and the Bucks just didn't have enough wind, legs, etc., to sort of stop that against such a good team. So, yeah, to your point, you know, they did try to, yes, it mattered to them. They were not a bunch of happy dudes in the locker room, which says something, I think. But, yeah, it's a different mindset, and I think it makes the rest of these, what, eight games, JR, like a little, nine games, a little more interesting.
Yeah, I think it's eight games left, if I'm adding right. Five of them are against teams that are either out of the playoffs or just, you know, below, you know, might be playing teams, the Bulls in that conversation, the Raptors. So many winnable games, but it bears mentioning that there is this back-to-back in the middle of the week here. Wednesday, they play in Indiana against the Pacers, and then they come home Thursday to face the Celtics, the team that they are, in fact, competing with for that top spot in the Eastern Conference. And honestly, that game could be huge. That game could really have a lot to say about whether or not the Bucks can solidify their spot in the at the number one seed in the East. You know, this Denver game.
Real quick, JR, and shout out to the NBA for putting the last two MVPs on a back-to-back in Denver. Right. And shout out to the NBA for putting the one late regular season game between the two best teams in the East on a back-to-back.
Yeah.
I mean, just that's a whole other absurd thing. I almost kind of swore there on an accident. But anyway, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to complain about that, actually, because Denver, yeah. And I don't remember this specifically, and I should have looked this up, but I believe, I mean, Denver rested everybody for their first meeting this year at Pfizer Forum between Denver and the Bucks. And I think that was because that was also a back-to-back. Or if not, it had been a pretty aggressive schedule. And going into that game, it was like, yeah, Denver's probably going to rest their guys. And that's exactly what happened. So we haven't really seen, I would say, Denver and Milwaukee compete against each other at the peak of their powers this season. Now, the schedule makers don't go into the season knowing who the teams are that are going to be great. But, oh, man, there's got to be – I don't know. I don't know if there does have to be a way around it. Yeah.
Kind of have an idea that Denver and Boston are going to be good teams.
Right.
You know what I mean? And so, yeah, that's – it's kind of a bummer.
Yeah, and you know, Jokic and Giannis have won the last four MVP awards. So, like, that's not a secret going into the year. So I was going to follow that up and asking if there's anything to take away from the Denver game, because it doesn't feel like – you know, it doesn't feel like that was a true meeting. I mean, if there is a schedule loss, again, for a team that, you know, has done very well on back-to-backs this year, it did feel like that was it, particularly because of the altitude, because, you know, it had been either on the sort of a west-ish coast swing. Yes, they had played very well against the Jazz the night before. Loved the comments in the postgame from the Jazz coach just being like, oh, we almost had them. Losing like 144 to 116. It was great. We can talk more about Denver as we get later into the postseason, but that does feel like a very plausible, you know, finals matchup. And I didn't know if there were any particular takeaways that you could glean seeing these two teams, you know, go at it for a little bit. Did anything stand out, or is that just a kind of move on from that game?
No, I mean, the first half was really good basketball. You know, the Bucks up by 10, you know, gradually the Nuggets sort of reeled them in and, you know, within a couple possessions. And Jamal Murray, actually, JR, was the reason Denver was even still connected at that point. I mean, he I think, had four threes in the first half. I mean, he kind of really carried the team as Brook Lopez was sort of going one-on-one against Nikola Jokic. And that's one thing that I thought was interesting. You know, JR, over the years that we've been doing this up until this season, right, it was, oh, how come the Bucks don't quote unquote adjust? How come they don't do certain things against certain teams? The Nuggets were one of them. I think last year they played one game with Jokic. It was at Fiserv Forum. They threw multiple defenders at Jokic, leaving open three pointers. And after that game, like, I remember Jrue Holiday and I think Giannis had said, hey, like, we'd like to play more one-on-one against these guys. And that's what happened. Like, it was Brook Lopez and that was it against Nikola Jokic. And Brook had three fouls by the end of the first half, including his third with like 20 seconds remaining. And it was chippy. Like, Michael Malone got a tech in the first 2 minutes because he didn't like the way Brook was playing defense on his star. Jokic, I think, complained like really heavily consecutive possessions, and then the third one went right to Lopez and then got a foul. Right, so that was really interesting to see the Bucks do that again, JR. Like, if you extrapolate ahead, like, are you just giving Jokic to Brook, you know, and to Bobby? Is that just a thing you're gonna do? So that was interesting. Chris Middleton, there was a play, JR, where he stole a ball in the backcourt through contact, dribbled around a defender, and then sort of had like a Chris Middleton burst through the lane for a layup. I thought that was really important. I mean, he's been playing 30-plus minutes a game over the last month, but you're always looking for little signs, right, of like a guy really getting into himself. And I don't know. I mean, not that Chris is an explosive player, but I thought that sequence was like, oh, that looks good. If you're the Bucks, and then quite frankly, finally, like, they, you know, the Bucks were not happy. They gave up 37 first quarter points, like, down to 23 in the second. I think they feel like if they had been a little tighter on defense, they might have blown that thing open in the first half. And they're not wrong in feeling that way. Like, they looked like the better team for a wide portion of that. So I think if you're a Bucks fan, that first half, there were some really interesting things to pull from. But obviously the end result was what it was.
On Monday night, the Bucks are going to be facing the Detroit Pistons. Goran Dragic could be making his Bucks debut. He is looks like he's not going to. He's not on the injury report in quite the same way. I think he's probable, if I recall it, last check, or off entirely. I'm not sure, but good preparation by JR heading into this podcast. But we haven't seen him yet. And you'd mentioned that right at the outset. There's going to be some time. I don't know if we thought there'd be this much time, to the point that there's eight games left to see how Goran Dragic is going to fit into the rotation. He's a veteran. I'm sure Mike Budenholzer has some idea of how he's going to use him, and I don't know if necessarily him getting in games will change that trajectory. But give me your thoughts on seeing him and where you think he does fit in if this injury situation has possibly cost him a better chance at getting playoff minutes, or just what your vibe is right now with Goran Dragic.
Yeah, as we record this, he's still probable. I mean, we'll see closer to game time. The last time he was probable, he suddenly then was out. And then it sort of lengthened this process. I mean, I know Jay, you know, talking to Jay, he understood, hey, soft tissue. He's like, probably could have played through it if this was any other scenario, but understood the bigger picture. Goran is a little more interesting because I, you know, he's had right knee issues over the years, so he's dealt with knee issues, but he said this is a little different in that it's the other leg and whatever. So I guess we'll see. He is a veteran. I think there is something to be said for that in terms of, like, he knows how to play basketball, right? The Bucks. I mean, look, this is not like a quarterback trying to learn a new offense. This is not Kyrie Irving and Luka Doncic, right? We're talking about a limited minute bench player, 16 years in the league. And a lot of what basketball teams do are the same as what other teams do. They're just called different things, right? Like the sets are different. But again, he's been with the team now for several weeks. One would think he's picking that up. Now to the broader point of, like, what can he do? I'm really interested. He's bigger than Javon Carter, which I think helps him get his shot off in the paint. You know, little floaters, little mid-range. That's sort of his thing, finding those creases. I don't know what the matchup is, though, JR. Like, I could see a world where whoever the Bucks play on the way to a finals or in the finals matches up in a way where Goran Dragic is filling in just a few minutes of time to, you know, end the game, or, you know, I don't want to call it ineffectual, but you know what I mean? Like, it's not like important. I could also see a scenario where they play a series where he's the second point guard, you know, over Javon Carter to a degree, because of the combinations, and they feel like his offense or potential for offense is needed. So it's hard to guess. I still feel, though, broadly it's more of a matchup-based scenario, JR. I just don't think – I could be wrong, but I just don't think we're going to see Goran Dragic for, you know, 12 minutes a game in the playoffs. Like, I don't think that's why he's here.
It was another amazing week for Brook Lopez. The Lopezissance has been something else this year, and we've talked about him at length, and I'm curious to look ahead a little bit. He's an unrestricted free agent after this season, and I don't, like, you know, I think back to the Bucks haven't had many clumsy losses this year. The game at home against Indiana, I think, probably counts as maybe the worst loss of the year, with Indiana playing like it was without Tyrese Halliburton, and the Bucks take one on the chin at home. Brook Lopez didn't play in that game. And now, you know, like, the more I watch him, the more I'm like, is he indispensable? Like, he's kind of, I don't know if they can win without him. I'm wondering what happens to him next year. He's going to be 35 years old, but he is, I mean, is this like his best year? He's going to win. We talked about it a couple podcasts ago. He's going to win NBA Defensive Player of the Year. He's going to be the oldest player to win it for the first time. So what happens next? Where do they go with him? And I know that there's a lot to look forward to yet this season, but I'd be curious where you think the Bucks have to go. He's a $20 million cap hit at this point. I gotta think he's gotta get a raise even. So, like, can they afford him? What comes next in 2023 with Brook Lopez, do you reckon?
Oh, that's a $20 million question.
Yeah,
$40 million.
I was gonna say not just 20.
Yeah, I, on one hand, I feel like it was fair for the Bucks to want to see how this year went with him. You know, why maybe there wasn't an extension in the offseason, why there wasn't one during the season. Now, The flip side of that is how many other teams in the league are like, oh, Brooke Lopez is amazing again. And, you know, we'll take him for 2-3 years, whatever it may be. So without getting into the fine details, there are limits to what the Bucks can spend, you know, on him. And it's not like, you know, if the Orlando Magic want to promise him stake in Disney and give him $80 million. Like, I don't know, you know, how that works. But I do feel like you're right. He is sort of indispensable for what they do. I think his presence makes Giannis a better defender also. Mm-hmm. Makes Jrue Holiday a better defender also, for as good as those guys are on their own. The fact that he's tapped back into a traditional post game at times where they've been able to run through him, you know, set up plays for him over several possessions and he scores baskets. You know, how many times have we seen, oh, Brooke Lopez scored 6-8 points in a row, you know? I mean, there are broader questions here, JR, because obviously ownership may change and there's tax issues. But I'm just to your point, I do feel like he's shown he's got more left in the tank. It's up to them now to decide, do we pay for, we think there's 1 year of this left, but we have to pay for three.
Yeah.
We think there's 2 years of this left and we have to pay for four, at least up front, because Brooke told us in Portland, he feels he's nowhere close to done and he has a lot more left to do. Obviously I don't know what that means. I don't know what his, if he thinks he wants to play till he's 45 or 38, I don't know. But it does feel like the Bucks are going to have to make an effort to retain him, and we'll just have to see what that means.
Yeah, in a way, it's similar to the Aaron Rodgers situation, where you have a player playing still at an extraordinarily high level, past what you would expect to be his quote-unquote prime. You have to think, because he's getting older, that there's going to be a year where he just falls off a cliff. But, you know, that we thought that happened with Aaron Rodgers, and then he comes back and has back-to-back MVP seasons before falling off a cliff again. You would have thought back surgery would essentially, you know, be the beginning of the end for Brooke Lopez, and instead he comes back and has possibly his best year, and he's been completely available. I mentioned that he sat out the Indiana game, and how rare that is. He's always on the floor. So just a crazy situation. Jim, if they win the title again, and maybe even if they don't, I'm not sure there's another Milwaukee Bucks player who's going to wear number 11. And some of that, and this is a conversation we could talk about, the volume with which they retired numbers earlier in their franchise history put several guys in the rafters who are very, very good. You know, but like, shouts to Bob Lanier, who is a tremendous player and had a great career. But like, you retired Bob Lanier, you got to retire Brooke Lopez now too. Am I wrong? Like, I feel like Brooke Lopez has done more than Bob Lanier did in his years in Milwaukee. And I don't even have the stats in front of me, so I might be speaking out of school here. But I mean, Brooke Lopez is a Bucks legend at this point. Am I wrong?
Yeah, this is a tough one. I mean, Bob Lanier, yeah. I mean, he made a All-Star game, you know.
Oh, that's true. That's true.
Five Bucks seasons, or I guess 4 1/4. You know, it's just different. I think, you know, Bob, you know, stats-wise was at the
end of his career, right?
Right. Now, you could argue, though, Brooke was in the same thing, right? Like, what's an All-Star versus, you know, a DPOY, right?
Like, they got him for nothing. They got him for, pennies off the street for that first year. And he was still, like, 29 or 30.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because it's a really, really interesting comp, JR, because, yeah, the Bucks traded for Lanier at 31, retired at 35. I mean, Brooke, you know, sort of running along the same timeline in terms of their career. It's really interesting. Like, I won't say who it was, but there was a conversation in the locker room once about, hey, like, our two best players wear numbers for guys whose jerseys should have been retired before they got there, meaning Ray Allen and Michael Redd. Like, this is something like even they talk about. And you're right, the Lanier-Brian Winters thing is fascinating. We could do a whole podcast.
We should.
On this. I think we tried once. Didn't we do this once in the summer or something last year talking about retired number? That's and like what the Bucks should do. I think there's a way to handle some of this stuff, but this run of Bucks, I think they've got to win another title, JR, for some of these other guys. Like Giannis and Chris are stamp them, right?
Of course.
those guys are cemented. But
Drew
and
Brooke.
Drew fits into the Oscar category.
100%
right?
He does.
Is
everybody's got like an analogy Oscars, on this team. You know, Giannis and Kareem,
right?
You got it working on every level.
So like I don't know. It's really interesting because Oscar did help get the Bucks to a second final, but he only played 4 years, right?
Yes.
Like Drew's going to be 4 years next year. So what's the standard? Is it going to multiple finals? Is it going, all of a sudden you're going to get a bunch of dudes running around wearing like numbers in the 60s.
Love that.
So, I mean, it would be kind of hilarious.
It'd be great.
But,
77,
yeah,
baby. They should retire Ersan while they're at it.
I do think that some of these other guys, like, more has to be done and maybe a little longer tenures. And then I think the conversations get real, real hard for some of that stuff.
I mean, Brooke Lopez, like Bob Lanier, you know, Lopez obviously doesn't have Lanier's pre-Bucks career, but he's the all-time leading scorer in Brooklyn Nets history. So so there is something to hang his hat on. He does have a certain amount of pedigree. We could spend a whole podcast, and I think we have talked about it. I've expressed how I think the Milwaukee Brewers do this extraordinarily well, and that they have a Walk of Fame and a Wall of Honor, essentially a Hall of Fame and a Hall of Very Good, meaning the guys who hit certain benchmarks in terms of longevity and certain statistical benchmarks. Those guys all get honored separately, but the Walk of Fame dudes, those are like the legends of the city, and I love it. I love how they do it. The Milwaukee Bucks, I don't fault them. They were eager to honor their history early on in their history. And they put guys like, you know, Brian Winters up in the rafters. Brian Winters was a nice player, you know, like Junior Bridgman was the previous holder for most games played in Bucks history before Giannis passed him a couple weeks ago. So, like, no judgment, but like, you retire those guys, there's some new names that got to get up there in those rafters. I'm going to stump for Brook Lopez. I think he's a great all-time Bucks great. And if they win another title, I will be further emboldened in my opinion on that front. I don't know if there's more to discuss other than well, a couple things. This Boston game, I mean, what is your sense of it? It's you know, big enough where I do think they're going to play everybody regardless of the back-to-back. I would expect some players maybe sit out that preceding game against Indiana, but I mean, does it have the juice where you feel like this is it? Like the winner of that game is going to be the one seed in the East, or do you look at the Bucks schedule and say, you know, that's a big game, but the Bucks are probably going to take care of business down the stretch here and probably seal this thing off? I don't know. I don't feel like the Bucks have slipped or anything, but yet the Celtics have gained a little bit of ground over the last couple of weeks. They're playing well as well. So so what is your assessment of the race between Milwaukee and Boston?
So. It's interesting because I don't know if the Pacers will allow the Bucks to rest. Like that's not like the Pacers, but they've given the Bucks all kinds of problems with Giannis and the big three. Like, you know, they were up by 30 in Indiana, had to hang on, you know, and they beat them at home. Now, that's not to say they couldn't go to Indiana and smash them. But I would say the fact that they were up by 30 and almost gave it up makes me think that even if they're up by 30 in the third quarter, dude's still playing, right? To make sure that there's that. There is juice. Look, as we record this, the magic number 7, what does that mean? Combination of Bucks wins, Celtics losses. So let's say the Bucks beat Detroit, it's down to 6. Let's say they beat Indiana, it's down to 5 with 7 to play. If you beat Boston head-to-head, it's down to 3 with 5 to play. Like, I feel like it doesn't end the conversation, like 3-5, right? Like you could still lose 4 in a row and lose the thing. But no, I feel it matters because you can pick up 2 games in 1.
Mm-hmm.
The Celtics, just fans, if you're wondering, you know, they play Washington Tuesday night. I mean,
they got a pretty gentle like schedule to
win
finish
that game.
Too.
Yeah, they play at Philly. That's okay. We could call it a toss up. They have 2 home games in 4 days with Toronto, which, you know, Toronto's pesky. They're in the play in. Are they trying to jockey their seating in the play in to, you know, whatever? I don't know, you know, how that's going to go. Obviously, the Bucks, as you said, Chicago is sort of locked into the play in now. So, you know, what do those end of season games look like? I think if you're the Bucks, you really want this over with before Memphis comes to town and before you have that noon game in Toronto on April 9th. Like, no one wants to be playing at noon in Toronto, like, having to win. Like, that's, like, I think they want this sort of wrapped up in some fashion by then. So, yeah, and look, the Bucks 76ers, they go back, not back to back, but it's Celtics at home, Sixers at home.
Yeah.
And that's not easy. So, yeah, JR, I think there is real juice. I think the fact that Indiana's pesky does not help their cause. I think that's why they went for it in Denver. Look, and now, look, I'll give the Bucks credit. They have walked the walk, so it'll be interesting to see them finish this since they've talked the talk with winning the one seed. Because to me, that means, you know, I mean, Giannis popped up on the injury report with right knee soreness again, first time in a while, for the Pistons game. So I could see, sure, maybe there's a feeling of, okay, does he need a break before Boston? But yeah, it'll be interesting to see how they push this thing as they try to, you know, do what they said they want to do.
Before we check in on the MVP watch, which I think might be mostly a postmortem, seems to me. I'm not sure. I'm not sure who's going to win it anymore. I don't know if Giannis's chances have gotten any better here over the home stretch. But you wrote a story at jsonline.com that posted actually on Monday as we record this about Vin Baker, and interesting. Vin Baker has been around a while now with the Bucks. He's really, you know, kind of a long tenured figure in Bucks history. Obviously, he was a player, kind of a famous trade that sent him to Seattle, and he's had some demons that he's been very open about. And I just want you to sort of explain, you know, what you wrote about and kind of give a little background about it. I'll let you sort of set the stage what to expect for readers at jsonline.com.
Yeah, thanks, Jer. So I don't want to assume every listener would know this, but Vin Baker dealt with alcoholism and overuse of marijuana in the middle and part of his career. If you were to look up his Stats Basketball Reference, you'd see 4 All-Star games and I believe 2 All-NBA very early, and then it just didn't continue on that path. And that was something he dealt with quite famously. He's one of those athletes who says he lost his fortune as a player to these addictions, and it is sort of a famously now his road to recovery, I believe it's now 12 or 13 years sober, began when he went to go work at a Starbucks, quite literally as a barista, like to get his life back on track. He's had a book written. And yeah, he came to Milwaukee or returned to Milwaukee, JR, as a Bally Sports, or I guess at the time, Fox Sports Wisconsin analyst. And then when Jason Kidd was fired, Joe Prunty pulled him off the set to be an assistant.
Right.
And they liked what he did enough, at least in the front office, where they, you know, he interviewed with Mike Budenholzer and Bud's like, yeah, we want to keep you. So, yeah, he's been on the coaching staff the last, let's call it 6 seasons. But the news of this is he's opening an addiction recovery center around 76th and Hampton in Milwaukee. And they're looking at June. There's been some supply chain issues, but they're looking at June for this. And it's an interesting facility, JR, in that it's one of the very few in the city. that is intensive outpatient therapy for those battling addictions. You know, what does that mean? It means they don't have to, like, they don't have to stay in the place. Like, but it's intensive outpatient. They're going to offer medically assisted treatments, which means, yes, they will treat addictions with medicine, Narcan, and some of those things. Fentanyl strips are going to be provided. That's no small thing. And then also opioid addiction treatments. Again, these are not services, not that they're not available, but it's, you know, there aren't a ton of these that sort of all in one. And then, of course, there's also just the talk therapy, the actual counseling that goes with this stuff. It's an 8,000 square foot facility up there, accessible via public transit. That was important to Vin and his group. So buses can get there pretty easily as well. He's got a foundation, JR, where they will offer financial assistance for those who cannot afford it or do not have insurance. And then there's what they say is there's a mechanism in place where if you do not have insurance and you do need this assistance, they will get you on the path to Badger Care. And because they realize, look, like, you're not necessarily coming for addiction recovery with your whole life in order, right? So they didn't want people to not have access to this that need it. Obviously, addiction comes in all shapes and sizes and forms. So there are people who have the means to do it. So, he's also opening one in Schwabenon, JR. That's also going to open in the summer as well. They saw a gap in Brown County, actually.
Wow.
So that's. And so it's a big deal for him. I think it is. Even on an objective level, JR, like, I think it's a big deal for these services in the city. It just happens to be spearheaded by Vin Baker. And so I personally think it's a cool thing. I think he's like, look, basketball is my day job. I love coaching the Bucks. That's what I do. But otherwise, he's got an office there with a 7-foot door frame. So he doesn't have to look under doors. And he's like, I'm here in Milwaukee. Like, this is home now. And he's like, I never felt like that as a player. He's like, I maybe didn't necessarily feel that way when I first got back, like, as a broadcaster or coach. So that's been an interesting transition in his life, too. Check it out, jsonline.com. All of that information, like the health, the insurance stuff, who owns this, who's operating it, what are the treatments? That's all in the piece, you know, that for people who do need to know that more specifically. And of course, Vin's in there telling his story too, JR. So really, it's a different kind of community work for sure. Credit to Vin and his group, I guess, for putting this together.
All right, let's close it down by checking in on our MVP watch.
You was last season's most valuable player, or as it's called, the MP3. What was that like?
No, I was the MVP.
MP3.
No, I wasn't.
You was the MP3.
No, I wasn't.
Jim, this might be the last time we talk about it because I still just don't see any steam for Giannis. Joel Embiid, I think, has kind of picked up the... Maybe he's moved ahead of Jokic as the favorite, and Embiid is somebody who has not won the award before. I guess would be a little different, little refreshing. But I no matter what he does, Giannis just keeps putting up numbers. Does it in crazy efficiency way. The efficiency is off the charts, and the Bucks are the top team in basketball. But doesn't seem like that's translating. So I'll throw it out to you. See if there's any glimmer of hope that you have left in your heart that Giannis could be the MVP of the 2022-23 season.
I mean, to me, I think it's a two-person race between him and Embiid.
Oh, that's different than I would have. Tell me more.
So, I mean, I think Joel's going to have momentum in that way, but I think it's kind of hard to look past the best player on the best team who's having historical seasons. I mean, whatever. We said this last year, JR. If you were to take Jokic, Embiid, and Giannis' individual seasons and sprinkle them into history, they all would win the MVP. like, it's just unfortunate for two of three of these guys that they're doing this together. Mm-hmm. Like, it's great for us, bad for them if they you know, like, because only one of them could win it. I don't know. I think Jokic, right or wrong, I think the straw poll and then the subsequent conversation hurt him in the narrative sense. Mm. I think others were like, whoa, is he really that? Is he really 70% runaway third MVP? Whoa. Like, I think people really step back, right or wrong. I think Embiid, for as fantastic of a season as he's having, and scoring leader is the sexy thing in the NBA. They're still number three in the East.
Yeah.
I mean, they're still number three. Like, I don't know. You know, and I know Joel is motivated by this. Look, if they smash the Celtics and then roll back into Fiserv Forum and win in Milwaukee again, mm-hmm. late in the year, and look, that, you know, and Joel goes for 38 and 18 and they win, I mean, that may sway some folks, but to me, it's a two-horse race between Giannis and that's how I view it. You know, Jokic, of course, is still in the mix. He's going to get it. It might be a really tight vote, but I think Giannis has a chance still. We'll just have to see how, again, to our conversation, this podcast, how they approach these last handful of games in trying to win. And if they're going to try to win, that probably means Giannis is going to put up massive numbers.
Yeah, that's a good point. With the different mentality, you're not going to. Yeah, I don't know. Okay, you've convinced me. Not dead yet is the Giannis MVP discussion. So obviously we'll be, you know, some big games here down the stretch that could sway things one way or the other. Maybe that head to head against the Sixers could have something to do with it. I don't know. People looking for evidence one way or the other, they'll at least have that game to look forward to. Jim, any last thoughts before I send you away?
No, I think that's good. I mean, we're getting down to it, JR. I will say this. I will not be on with you on the podcast. Maybe Benny Buck and Ben Steele will jump on. I'm taking a rare end of season reprieve down the stretch of the regular season next week. So Ben Steele, Lori Nickel will be handling kind of the day-to-day over at jsonline.com. So I'll at least toss that out right now. But obviously be back full bore during the quote unquote mini bye week, if you will, during the play-in and obviously whatever else going forward. So jazzonline.com/deal, great time to hook that up because it's all, look, could be going to mid-June with these guys. So you want to make sure you're going to be able to access everything that we do over at the Journal Sentinel.
The baseball season is just beginning. I mean, the Badgers are still playing in the basketball in the NIT. They've reached the semifinals of the NIT. That's on Tuesday, maybe Thursday if they win. That'll be the same day that the Brewers season is getting underway. You've got Badger football is really top of mind right now. There's lots of good reasons to be following sports at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. So like he said, jsonline.com/deal. That is where you can get a digital subscription. You will not regret it. Jim, I'll talk to you then, I guess, in 2 weeks. We'll have to convene. Maybe Benny Buckets and Lori Nickel and I can come up with something a little off the cuff or a little unusual for next week. I don't know. I've got to start brainstorming, but we will be back in touch, looking at play-in opponents and figuring out where the Bucks will ultimately land in the postseason. Thank you, Jim. We will talk to you again very soon.
All right. Talk to you then.
Find us on Stitcher, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts, the Point Forward Podcast. It's produced by me, J.R. Radcliffe. You can find me on Twitter at J.R. Radcliffe. You can find him at Jim Ozarski. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. Chat with you again soon. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Point Forward Podcast. A Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and JSOnline.com production.